This is Iconic.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th age. I'm your host, JM, and with me, as always, are Nick and Mark.
Hey.
Hello.
We have a great show for you this week. We are interviewing Gareth Hanrahan. So you are we've had you on the show before. You've written 13th Age. You've written a lot of role-playing game materials. But now we have something else we get to talk with you about. We have the fact that you have two published novels at this point, and some of us might be eagerly awaiting the third. But before we get into that, Nick, do we have any new patrons?
Yes, we had Patrick join our patronage this last month, and we were excited to have him as a D4 patron. And it's wonderful having Patrick be a supporter of the show in this way. And if anyone else would like to support the Iconic podcast and Iconic production, you can do so by going to patreon.com/iconicproduction.
Excellent. Well, Gareth, welcome to the show. This might be a strange question to ask you at this point in time with everything going on, but are you getting any gaming in?
Not yet. I mean, I'm doing lots of like board gaming with the family, and my regular gaming group, we're trying to like move things online, but we're still sort of finding our feet with that. I mean, things are changing so quickly. I mean, like about 2 weeks ago, we canceled our like gaming night because, things are getting slightly odd with the whole virus thing, and people thought, like, some of the people in the group thought we were overreacting, and then 2 days later, the whole country was shut down, so things are moving quickly. But I hope to start something on Discord fairly soon.
Video or play by post, or
I don't know. Something. We'll probably just like do play by video or play by audio. And myself and Romney Law are trying this like play by mail by video thing, which it's all very, very find your feet in this demi apocalypse.
That's right. Well, before we get into gaming topics, let's talk about Gutter Prayer and Shadow Saint. What would you want people who may not know that you have novels out? What would your elevator pitch be to our listeners?
Right. The Gutter Prayer is this sort of semi-steampunk or alchemy punk fantasy novel set in this world where basically the gods are quite literally at war. And these three thieves, a runaway girl, a man who's slowly turning to stone, and ghoul, pretty much taken straight out of Lovecraft, are sent on a mission by the Thieves Guild, and things start exploding and continue to explode for the next 500 pages or so. And The Shadow Saint is the sequel to that. It's set about 9 months later, where the city of Gwerden is slowly rebuilding. And that one is fewer explosions, more political intrigue, at least for the first half.
Well, I've read Gutter Prayer, and it was really good. It kind of took me by one of our friends of the show recommended it to me. I didn't even know you had it kind of in development. And I burned through it, and then I'm about a third of the way through Shadow Saint right now. Really enjoyable.
Yeah,
very much.
I had gotten connected to that in one of our last episodes, and also picked up Gutter Prayer and read all the way through it. And you know, like James said, I was also shocked to just like, this is really, really good. I'm looking forward to picking up the next one.
Yeah, and book three is currently sitting on my desk, mostly edited. It should be out in January next year, but that like pre-assumes the society continues to exist. So
That's right. In the timeline where books continue to come out, your book should be available in January of next year. What's the title of the third one?
To be determined.
To be determined. That's a good title. It's got some intrigue in there.
Yeah, so nicely, I think ambiguous mystery. No, it's probably like the imprisoned god or something.
Okay,
it hasn't been locked down yet. But yes, assuming we have a society and an economy, these things can be purchased from surviving good bookstores. not apparently from Amazon, because Amazon have apparently switched over to only doing like your vital necessities for the next 2 months. But sure.
Well, I consider books to be vital.
Yeah, Amazon are like, you know, to their credit, I think, switched to groceries and so forth for a while.
Yeah.
It's out for Orbit Books, who are a big publisher, so it should be in most bookstores.
Well, We had a couple of questions from people who've been on the show who have read the books. If you don't mind taking a little aside to answer a couple of questions in regards to Legacy of the Black Iron Gods.
No, go ahead.
Where did you come up with Gwerdon?
The name or the city?
The city. Like, one of the questions is, where did it come from? Because it is a very unique city. I really enjoyed your take on like how religion and faith and gods would actually play out in sort of a Gygaxian fantasy world. Also, the prologue where you took the prologue from the perspective of one of the buildings in the city, which sets kind of the tone for the first book. So where did the city come from? Where did the idea come from?
It's really not one idea. It's more so like, you know, I have had like lots and lots of things I wanted to do floating around, and rather than like, you know, build a story around each of them, or like, you know, wait until the perfect time to use a particular concept or theme came up, I just sort of jammed everything together and said, right, okay, you know, what sort of setting would support all these things I want to write about? There's a book on Victorian engineering which I read like 20 years ago, which always randomly stuck with me. So there are loads of bits from that in there. The city itself is sort of a mix of Cork, where I live, London, Edinburgh, bits of New York, all sort of jammed together. The Gygaxian elements, I mean, they just come from a lifetime playing fantasy role-playing games. I mean, one of the characters in there is Alina, who, if you've played the D&D Redbox, she's the cleric in the Choose Your Own Adventure part of that.
Oh, I did not recognize that.
Because she gets killed off by Bargle the Infamous, which traumatized a generation of role players. So I brought her back for this.
Nice. So you have a really interesting take on the way the gods interact with the world. I enjoyed your paladin who kept telling the gods to basically leave her alone and stop possessing her body while she's trying to have a conversation with someone. How did you come up with that? You know, so I don't want to give too much away about the books, but there is a lot of miracles. There's a lot of what would it actually be like to have divine presence on a battlefield? And sort of the main city is dealing with the fact that they don't want to get caught up in this God's war. Was that just kind of a, what would the practical applications of a, you know, spending all this time in 13th Age and seeing, and, you know, D&D and Gygaxian fantasy, what would that really look like in a world? Or what was your take on that?
Where it actually came from, I was in Tesco's, which is like the European equivalent of, I guess, Walmart or something. It's like a department store, a grocery store. And I was worrying, as I do when shopping, about just-in-time supply lines and the like fragility of the modern world, which is looping back to our current predicament of the virus. But anyway, and I just had this like, you know, vision of how we're all sort of surrounded by these giant invisible support mechanisms and structures and like, sort of complex arrangements that just like, you know, they work, but if they sort of flicker or got distorted or like, you know, got messed up, even for an instant, this sort of artfully created life we've got for ourselves would start falling apart. And then when I start translating that into fantasy terms, it's basically, okay, what happens if the gods and sort of the fundamental aspects of reality go mad or collapse or stop working normally? And then we start extrapolating from that as like, you know, what would it feel like to have basically active gods in the world? How would people react? How would it feel to have these invisible presences be able to, like, you know, exert their will upon your everyday life? And then you basically take that almost like, you know, oppressive concept and map it onto traditional D&D clerics and paladins, and that's where you come up with it.
I am definitely going to bring that in with at least the paladins in my world. Because that was a really interesting take that kind of expands the idea beyond just kind of the typical way we've seen paladins. So, Nick, what about you? Do you have any questions about Gutter Prayer as you've just finished that one up?
Well, I thought it was really fascinating how the saints or the cleric slash paladin type characters frequently weren't the devotees of the gods, that they just were claimed by the gods. I thought that was a really interesting take, not one that I had seen before. It'd be interesting to bring that into a game, maybe as a one unique thing or something. You know, I'm the cleric of one of the gods, but I don't want to be. How would you describe where that kind of overpoweringness and just being used as a tool rather than being a willing servant came into be?
That was influenced to a degree by Unknown Armies, which is a role-playing game, like modern-day horror-ish role-playing game, where you've got these archetypes, where these sort of like, you know, spiritual aspects of humanity. And there you can be an avatar of a particular archetype, like you can be an avatar of the hunter or the masterless man or the mother or something. And if you act in accordance with that avatar, you get very supernatural powers. But it's also possible to sort of unwittingly channel powers that game. Like if you just happen to be acting in accordance with the dictates of the hunter or something, then you get sort of low-level hunter powers. Basically, just I took that idea and because it's fantasy, turned up to 11 and you get these active gods reaching in and grabbing saints.
Again, just I don't want to give too many spoilers away, but one of my favorite scenes is when the paladin is really telling her god what she thinks of them. And it's basically just like, F off. I don't have time for you right now. All right. Well, let's get into role-playing games.
You've released recently the Book of the Underworld. So again, you know, the elevator sale of why should our listeners buy this book? And what's it about?
The Book of the Underworld is a guide to the realms below the Dragon Empire. It's basically is a underground / underdark supplement of 13th Age, covering all your usual subterranean suspects of tentacle monsters and Darrow and orc warrens and labyrinths beneath and weird metals and lost cities and spider monsters. But putting the sort of trademark 13th Age wackiness, anything goes, and player-facing weirdness onto all of them. Yeah, it's basically an awful lot of fun encounters and weird things to be discovered in the dark places below the world.
It does have a lot of like just great weirdness and sort of, I don't want to say refinement, but sort of hyper-focus on some of those underdark tropes that we have seen for the last 20 and 30 years.
So as you were working through the book, what was your favorite thing to write about in that book?
I'm sort of a big fan of drow and spider things in general, as anyone who's read book two of the Black Iron series will see. But no, I think it was, I'm fascinated by underground spaces and the sort of like, you know, these sort of unknown depths. So it was really refreshing just to be able to do a book where you wouldn't be really sure what's around the next corner. So it's throwing in all sorts of strange encounters and sort of anticipating how players would react to them. Because Underworld Adventures let you be a lot more sort of surrealistic and strange. Because the overworld has to, or the surface world has to make sense. It's going to be like, you know, a quasi-medieval world with a fantasy gloss on it. But there's nothing on Earth like, and that sort of like, you know, vast underground realm. So it's almost become almost sort of like more like science fiction going to like a strange alien world or something, where you don't know what's going to be down there. Anything could be down there. So the players become explorers, like, you know, become sort of like, you know, on a sort of mission of first contact. So it was just the like, you know, the wide open creative palette you can use.
I really like some of the monster designs in there, like the cave in the Underworld Caves Eat You, sort of the like the carnivorous caves. There's a ton of great. It's a term that I've used before. I'm not sure if it's if I picked it up somewhere, if it just spawned from like the back of my mind. But it's very much a garden source book where there's a lot of seeds. And depending on where the GM chooses to water the source book, you're going to get a lot of good use out of it. The Kingdoms of the Mechanical Sun, the Tomb of 10,000 Demons. There's so much good stuff in there. And then you've made it so that one of the things I liked is that, yes, it's weird, but it gets weirder the further you go down. And I like how you sort of built it into the implicit understanding of 13th Age that, hey, there are tiers in this world and you don't really want to go outside of your tier to start. Like the first level of the Underdark is the adventurer tier. And then you move into the Hollow Realms where things get weirder. And then you just gave us this very sort of mythic deeps where you would go for an epic level campaign or wrap up, which was really nice.
Is there an area like Journey to the Center of the Earth where you come across the land of dinosaurs?
Yes. I say that with complete certainty because, yes, there is. But yeah, I mean, one of the wonderful things about writing a book like this one is just writing the outline, because you get to basically write, like, you know, these section titles, like, you know, the Tomb of 10,000 Demons, the Realm of the Flayed Ones. And you have absolutely no idea what they're going to be. You just click a couple of these, throw forward these ridiculously evocative titles. Actually, did you ever see a game called Lexicon?
Yes.
Yeah, it was like playing a Lexicon game myself. Lexicon, for those who aren't familiar with it, this game played on a wiki where the participants are these academics creating this sort of fictional, or like writing about this fictional event. And each entry is supposed to forward references that other players fill in. So, like, you know, if you're writing about the fall of the Dwarven Kingdom, then when you're on playing the A round and the player's writing about the apocalypse, the player might write into their entry like, you know, this is clearly because of the reign of the mad King Shoggoth and his Diamond Guard. And you put like empty hyperlinks to the mad king and the Diamond Guard. And then some other player later on writes those entries with more forward references, because you're challenging yourself to work out what the hell you're on about.
Right. They're not broken links. They're links you just haven't filled out yet. They sound good in the moment. And then after your brain kind of sits for a while, you can kind of go back and say, all right, what is this?
Exactly. Fishy expeditions into the unconscious.
That's right.
Considering that Book of the Underworld is in its final stages before being fully released, what do you have on your plate now that's related to 13th Age that you want to talk about?
It's not quite on my plate. It wasn't on my plate. It has been temporarily moved to a back burner. But I'm working on a big campaign currently titled Prophets of the Pyre. But again, that may change because titles are A, very important, but also something you sort of nail down later in development. If it continues in its planned format, it'll be a 10 adventure campaign, each adventure taking up one full level pretty much, although there's scope for adventures in between. The adventure tier section, which I've done, sets up a home village for the player characters in this isolated valley, which gets attacked and invaded by various monsters, and there are sinister conspiracies going on in the background. The champion tier, you'll be part of the Imperial Dragon Cavalry flying around the Empire, thwarting evil and investigating mysteries. And then the epic tier is the world-saving quest, but basically elements of that world-saving quest will have been seeded in the previous two tiers, so it'll all meld together into a long, epic campaign. I guess that's the plan.
Sounds fantastic. My normal gaming group, we'd have to change our history because in Book of Ages, the Dragon Imperial Empire was wiped out in the Seventh Age.
You just like set it back then, it's fine.
Yes, that's why it ended. Oh, yeah.
I'm just thinking of all of the different characters that have died in The Stone Thief and how this book may provide even more ways for characters to experience those final moments.
I'm telling you, we have this plan to make a website called GarethKilledMyCharacter.com where people can come in and they can fill a form. They can say, you know, I was playing in Mirkwood. I played in The Stone Thief. Here's where I died. And then it would just once a week send you an email to like, I don't know if I could distill it into player tiers for you to drink, but I could definitely send you like an aggregated email of everybody who sort of...
You know, in person, I'm an absolute wuss GM. So when I write adventures, I tend to like, you know, be strict so that when I actually run them myself, I can go, okay, I have to do this. The book says it. The book took it, not me.
Almost like plausible deniability.
But if you say the book made me do it, but your name is listed as the author...
But books go through this whole editing process. So really, like, you know, you can blame the editors for most of these deaths.
That's true. That's true. I have a friend who is on, I think they're nearing 120 sessions in Mirkwood right now.
Oh, so, switches.
Yeah. He has a list of the fallen that he constantly updates. They're loving that campaign. So you've got Prophets of the Pyre. Anything else 13th Age that you either have like in your mind that you would like to do or...
Well, there are two other books that I'm playing a small part of or doing like a chapter each of them. There's the Untitled Drakenhold source book. I'm going to do a chapter on the docks and sea trade and sort of the weird interface where the strangeness of Drakenhold rubs up against the comparative normality of the rest of the Dragon Empire. And there's also a book on Khor Behemoths. Mm-hmm. And hopefully for that, I'll be doing the Scavenger's Parade, which is this sort of like, you know, Terry Gilliam-esque bunch of lunatics, vagabonds, scavengers, and weirdos who basically... They're basically Khor Behemoth groupies. They go, they travel along in the wake of the Behemoths, picking up stuff that falls off the back of them and scavenging stuff and, like, you know, looking through, like, mountains of Khoru dung for magical components and trading with weird wizards along the way. Basically, that'll be an awful lot of grimy and low-level fun.
I really like that idea. And I know we've talked, when we had Rob on, he talked a little bit about these books. And so basically, you're going to be doing one chapter of each, but basically each chapter is going to be a sort of standalone, use what you want out of this. This is sort of kind of really leaning into 13th Age is however you want to play it. And here are a bunch of different ideas on how to play with the behemoths or with Drakenhall.
Yeah, the books are basically anthologies. Mm-hmm. Another way, like every 13th Age book sort of pushes the envelope on, like, you know, do it your way. Mm-hmm. If we continue on this arc, we're going to end up like publishing a book that's basically just like, you know, random words in a random order. Like, you know. there was a famous case where this book was published and the printer left out lots of punctuation and they added a 2-page set of basically just full stops, commas, and semicolons with the instruction the reader should salt and pepper the book to their satisfaction.
I love that.
That's amazing.
Best errata ever.
That's right. Hopefully they gave enough for those of us who like the Oxford comma to use all of the commas.
That's right.
But 13th Age is not the only line that you're working on. We've seen that you've done stuff for Knights Black Agents. Obviously, we talked a little bit about Tor. What other books are you working on?
Right now, for Pelgrane, I'm working on Gumshoe Fantasy 1-to-1, which currently doesn't have a title yet, which basically takes the whole one-player, one-GM paradigm of the Gumshoe 1-to-1 line, which already has Cthulhu Confidential and Knights Black Agents solo ops, doing that as a fairly conventional D&D-esque fantasy setting. If you have someone who you want to introduce to role-playing, but they're unsure about being part of a gaming group, then this is a nice one-on-one, easy intro to fantasy gaming. With the current pandemic and everyone in lockdown, I'm looking at doing some role-playing games for kids, again, under the Gumshoe umbrella.
Well, if you need playtesters for that, I happen to have an 8-year-old who has started running D&D, or his version of D&D. So if you need some children playtesters, I happen to know one.
Well, I have two in the next room, but yes, more.
That's true. You do. Yeah. I liked your afterword thanking your twins for being born as part of the process of getting the book done.
Actually, I had a fascinating experience. I was going to run like literally basic D&D for them, and I printed out a pair of character sheets. And one of the boys grabbed the character sheet, declared that he was going to be the admin or GM of the games, because they're like both playing Minecraft, so all these terms computer games come in. And he started using the blank player character sheet as GM notes. So, for example, we could all, like, you know, the list of treasures became a sort of checklist of things we had to find to finish the dungeons. So we had to find something gold, something silver, something electrum. And our attacks were like the saving throws. So we could, like, you know, we could use poison once per game. We could use dragon breath twice per game.
Oh, wow.
Petrification 3 times per game. Thoroughly bizarre sort of cargo cult-esque game where he had no idea the context of these things, but was sort of improvising on the fly. It was like, you know, fascinating sort of gaming and anthropological point of view.
So my son Zane, I don't know if you've seen them. Wizards had put out their 4 books. I think they're called The Young Adventurer's Guides to, and it's like Warriors and Weapons and Dungeons and Tombs and Spells and Magic. And there's one more in there, like Monsters and something else. They're designed for, we're going to introduce you to each of the components. There's like flow charts with questions. Do you like being outdoors? Then maybe you should play a ranger. And so that's what he brought. He sort of like has read through all 4 of those Young Adventurer's Guides. And in the Dungeons and Tombs, they list like how to map, and then they give you a bunch of symbols. So he made up his map. I'm not sure how he placed his symbols, but we're probably all going to die. But that's what he's coming in from. He's like, I have this meta knowledge because I've read these books that were designed for me to kind of introduce me to all of the different themes of the game, which is, it's just fascinating.
I mean, I remember like when I was first like getting started in gaming, this is all like pre-internet. So you'd find a particular book in a bookshop and have no idea of how it fits into the larger world. Like, I remember getting the first edition AD&D Manual of the Planes, and it was the only AD&D book I had. And there's a whole set, incredibly boring in retrospect, section of that, where it's like all about adjusting the various spells to different planar conditions. It's like, you know, yeah, Otto's Freezing Sphere has like half effect in the Plane of Fire. And I had no idea what Otto's Freezing Sphere did, but it was like incredibly evocative. No pun intended. Mm-hmm. To have all these names and concepts floating in the void with no idea how they all connected up. And that's sort of like weird serendipity, something that's very hard to achieve these days, where everything is sort of, can be handed to you on a plate thanks to the internet. But it's sort of heartening to see kids sort of like taking these things and creating their own strange new interpretations of them.
Mm-hmm. I got into gaming through Palladium role-playing games and GURPS. And so I had a friend who in junior high or high school was like, hey, you like role-playing games, you know, here's for your birthday, I got you this D&D book. But it was Prayers of the Faithful. It was just a list of spells and cleric artifacts from Forgotten Realms. So I had no frame of reference, but it was so interesting and just kind of sucked me in, because it's like, well, what are these things?
Yeah, it's just like what I was talking about earlier, where like, you know, the forward references. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing where like, you know, once you have a evocative name or a phrase or concept, your brain can't help but like you go, okay, what does that mean? I must seek it out. It's interesting how the mind works and how the gamer mind works.
Well, guys, do you have any other questions for Gareth on anything we've talked about? Anything else you wanted to just ask him while he was here? Why he included some encounters in the Stone Thief that may or may not have killed your characters?
No, I know why they're there.
To hurt you.
I can appreciate it because I can, you know, I run games too. So I like, oh, this sucks. This would be really cool to run a group through. So, you know, there's 2 sides of that coin.
Nick, any final thoughts?
I'm very grateful that you're willing to take the time out of your day to connect with us and talk some gaming stuff, talk some book stuff, and kind of give us a foretaste of what may be coming down the pipe.
Yes. Oh, you're all very welcome. I mean, like everyone else, my day at the moment is sitting inside waiting for, like, you know, sanity to return to the world.
Well, we'll have to have you on the show again. You know, as you said, our schedules seem to align a lot easier now.
Strange thought.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Thank you for coming on and taking time out of your day. I wish you well with 13th Age and other gaming writing and, you know, Legacy of the Iron Gods. I look forward to finishing up Shadow Saint and seeing To Be Determined.
Exactly. Hope you enjoy.
And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast.
Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.